Hope you all had a great weekend. Let's do it again. Welcome into another week. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, and a new era will begin tonight. And something that hasn't been seen before in the WNBA, to be honest with you. I think the stardom of Caitlin Clark, we've been previewing it for a long time, and it looks like it's going to come to fruition. Even the Indiana Fever kind of tipping their hand a little bit with a social media post last night, marking 22 hours before the start of the WNBA draft. Who the heck could they possibly be referencing? Anywho, it's going to be fun. And here's the fact of the matter of it all. You know, this is trailblazing. This is great for the state. Enjoy it for right now, because you know what happens in sports. All good things come to an end, or all good things kind of be criticized. I don't want to be the negative of it all, but at some point, you're going to start to get into the analytical nature of it. So I hope we don't get to that point, because this is neat and truly unique. And quite frankly, you know, we're in the content business. The more sports to talk about, the better. And we're all for it here on this program. But I was thinking about this yesterday. So Caitlin Clark, the basketball player, Caitlin Clark, the personality. Now, you may think those two are intertwined. I guess the personality on the floor to the basketball player itself, I guess you don't get one without the other. But is it more impactful, the brand or the player itself? And here's the factor that we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, because we have more local things to discuss before we get to this conversation a little bit later on. But she's going to make an impact more so in another area of the game than her scoring early on. I think something about her game is going to translate early on to the WNBA game than maybe her deep shots from three, which that's what you tune in for, right? The logo threes. It drives a lot of people nuts. It kind of drives me nuts, because there were so many shots in the Final Four and the championship game that you just let happen because she's Caitlin Clark. It's the same thing when you watch Damian Lillard and Steph Curry. She's bringing that different nature to the women's game. And look, you got to resign to the fact that that's the way the game's played right now. That's what's allowed in the game right now. I don't know if anybody else felt the same way about the Pacers scoring 157 points to lock up their spot in the playoffs in game 83 of the season for them. And by the way, that is not a mistake. They did play 83 games, only 82 of them counted towards their overall record, but 157 points. I mean, look at this. The last five games for the Indiana Pacers, they put up 126, 117, 140, 120, and 157. They went 4-1 in those games. They lost a game where they scored 120 points. I'm bringing that up not to complain about it. I'm bringing that up because that's just kind of the way the flow of the game goes now. And it is commonplace to take ridiculous deep shots, and that's the game. I mean, that's just it. It is what it is. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit about Caitlin Clark a little bit later on in the program today, because it is a significant day for Indiana as a whole. I heard an interview with Lynn Dunn, the general manager of the Indiana Fever, earlier today. I think it goes without saying there's going to be no surprises tonight. Could you imagine at 7:30 tonight if they pick somebody else and what the reaction would be? You just can't pass up something like this. You just can't. Can't do it. And so it'll be a lot of fun to watch how things move forward. Speaking of the Indiana Pacers, by the way, they are in the playoffs. They don't have to play in the play-in, which is wonderful. You know, I guess it'd be drama-filled, but this is their first playoff gig in four seasons, because they played in the play-in a couple of years back, but this time they are in a seven-game playoff series. Their matchup, the three-seeded Milwaukee Bucks, and boy, is that going to be a spicy, spicy series. I hope it is I hope it's everything we hope it's going to be. I hope. Because, you know, playoff basketball, and you think of all those different series back in the day. I mean, you think about in the early 2010s. It was chippy between Miami and Indiana and the Lance Stephenson effect and Paul George and his whole deal with that crew. It definitely was more than just on the floor. They were trying to get in Dwayne Wade and LeBron James' head. You go back to the Knicks series, all those different things. And you know what? I think any playoff series would provide content regardless. But the fact that the first round playoff series is against two teams that have certainly had their moments in the regular season, I think of matchups this year that created national conversation. I think the Giannis Antetokounmpo running into the tunnel trying to get a game ball from a franchise record 60-plus points is one of the most discussed topics of an individual matchup at any point this year. It sounds ridiculous. It absolutely does. But that created conversation. That created a little bit of angst. That created the back and forth between Halliburton and Antetokounmpo. It created the back and forth between Dame Lillard and Halliburton. Halliburton pointing to his left wrist, saying it's Dame time after he hits a dagger shot in one of the regular season games. This is everything you could hope for in a series, and I'm thrilled that it's series number one. This feels different than just a first round series, and boy, if you play well, what the heck happens? But you know what, when you get to Sunday, which is game number one, I don't think we've gotten the exact time for that game just yet. You know, I remember back, and I've repeated this statement so many times over the last several years. Back in 2018, when the Indiana Pacers took LeBron James in Cleveland to a seven-game series, and that was the coming-out party for Victor Oladipo, and you had Domantas Sabonis coming off the bench. It was Miles Turner. It was a bunch of guys. Bojan Bogdanovic. I'm trying to think of who else was on that team. Anyway, I remember after that series, there was such a positive feel. There was such a, oh my gosh, look at what they accomplished. They took LeBron to seven games, and everybody had felt like the best was yet to come. Guess what? 2018 was the peak of this particular time period. You know, Oladipo gets hurt. You trade for Caris LeVert. Domantas Sabonis and Turner playing together. It didn't work. I mean, it was a colossal mess. You know, you moved on from Bogdanovic. You brought in Malcolm Brogdon. Brogdon put up great numbers but never really contributed to winning. You know, you had a lot of different things going on there. And I remember after that 2018 series coming on the air on this particular program and saying, you know what, it's hard to get there again. And not that you wanted to put so much on that team to say, how could you miss that opportunity on the road? You had a lead in Cleveland in game seven for a team that ultimately ended up going to the NBA finals that year. Was it 2018? Maybe it was earlier than that. Anyway, And I was one of the few people saying it, and look, I get it. I understand there's times where I come across as the guy that can't enjoy the moment, okay? But sometimes you just got to say it real, because I know how many times it is so hard to even just get to the playoffs and, A, put a team that had an iconic player in LeBron James to the brink in the first round of a 2-versus-7 matchup. And I just want everybody to understand that as we head in. I know that this Pacers team is different. I know they're young. I know that they're probably not done making moves, and this is going to be a run for a while, but we hear this all the time. Oh my gosh, this is the next up-and-coming young team. You know who it was back when in the early 2010s? This team always comes to the forefront of my mind. Remember John Wall and Bradley Beal with the Washington Wizards? And they thought that that was the best backcourt in the NBA. And, oh my gosh, you add one more piece and that team is going to do some damage. John Wall's out of the league. Bradley Beal is a distant third player with the Phoenix. I mean, it evaporates so quickly. And I, you know, we're going to get to a conversation later in the show of all of the different golfers that golf has coordinated as the next guy that's going to be Tiger Woods-like. And quite frankly, it's a list of guys that have won, you know, a couple majors. And you're so desperately trying to push something forward before it actually happens. We're going to get in that conversation at the very end of the show today because it's not very often I get to talk national golf on this program. And believe me, we're not going to spend a ton of time on it. But, I want to go into this feeling as though, hey, Pacers accomplished something getting back to the playoffs. That's wonderful. Based on where they've been, we went through this on Friday. It is an incredible accomplishment to have what the last 3 years have been for this franchise and to be in this position. You chalk that up as great, but I got to tell you, you have an opportunity against Milwaukee coming up this week in this series. And, you know, I think regardless of what happens, the fan base is going to react like this. Oh my gosh, the best is yet to come. And I always bring up 2018. Can't remember if it was 2017, 2018, whenever it was. My years get all mixed up. You know, it feels like just yesterday it was 2018. I don't know why. Feels like, you know, my wife and I were getting married in 2019, like just yesterday, and we're coming up on our 5-year wedding anniversary. I know, I get that. I understand my sense of what was just yesterday. You know, I guess I got to wait 20, 30 years, whatever the case may be. But I go back to that when it comes to the Indiana Pacers, remembering how the good feelings were there after they lost in Game 7 to LeBron and that Cleveland Cavaliers team, and watching what has happened since then. You know what? You can't take for granted the opportunities that are ahead of you. You can't just say, oh my gosh, they're going to get back there. Oh yeah, they're going to get back there. Oh, they're going to win one. Oh, they're going to get to an Eastern Conference final. I mean, think about Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. Same thing. They got to the 2015 AFC Championship game. Have they gotten back since? They sure haven't. Is Andrew Luck still playing football? He sure is not. I mean, you just think that you're just going to go on this magic carpet ride and it's all going to, you know, be a progression. Oh, man, the first year you're going to have a close loss, and then the next year you're going to take that next step, and then the next year you're going to take a step, and then finally you're going to make the NBA fight. Everybody feels like it's a stair-step method, but the fact of the matter is it doesn't happen like that in sports. So why am I going into this rant, I guess? This is an immense opportunity for this Indiana Pacers team to do something more than just be a playoff team. This is a team you had success against in the regular season. The postseason's a totally different deal, and you want to play a team that's full strength. Giannis may not play early on, which is an opportunity for you. You can't control whether he's available or not. You'd love to play them at full strength. But that's also an opportunity that you have to take advantage of. And I don't know at the end of the day if that changes the perception on, hey, it's just great to be there this first time as a playoff team, and you're hoping to get back here time and time and time again. That's why you sign up Tyrese Halliburton for 5, 6, 7 years, okay? But I just don't want to get to this point in 2 weeks where – regardless of what happens, and if they end up losing, trying to say, oh, well, gosh darn it, they tried hard. The best is yet to come. Because, you know, I've been in this long enough, and a lot of you fans have been out there watching this long enough to know that because you think it's a stair-step method, and it totally does not end up that way. You know, how long did it take you? And there were probably many years, right? Many years of the early 2000s Colts where you probably resided to the fact that the Colts are never going to win a Super Bowl. I mean, because they ran into the Patriots every year. They had the Pittsburgh Steelers loss. They had the San Diego Chargers loss. I mean, they had all these different things. That was a perfect team to follow to kind of be like, it doesn't happen in a stair-step method. It just doesn't happen that way. So I don't know why we got here, but I guess it's a perfect Monday conversation right here. Here we are. We're back. I've been kind of thinking on this ever since watching the game yesterday where the Pacers beat the Atlanta Hawks. But we're going to talk more about the Indiana Pacers, maybe a little bit more on today's show, but certainly throughout the week. Their first game of their series against the Milwaukee Bucks is scheduled to be on Sunday. The time not determined yet. And the reason being, I guess you got to shake out all the play-in related scenarios and structure those times of those playoff games based on what coast you're playing on. I don't know. I don't know why you're waiting on this. But I do think in the Eastern Conference, there isn't a more intriguing series than Bucks-Pacers. I really don't think there is, because if you go back to the NBA regular season, other than like who's the MVP, who's the best team, those sorts of things, the story that entered the national landscape was what was the Pacers-Bucks game where Giannis ran back to the tunnel to try to find the game ball. Seriously. So I do think that there's some animosity on both sides. I really do. And that'll make for a fun series beginning on Sunday. So we'll see how all of that plays out. Pacers, again, got the 157-115 win over the Hawks. And I want to say this before we end segment one of the show today. Okay? I have told you, I have said it pretty much every week since we started this program 6 years ago. Okay? I'm going to talk about when I'm right. I'm going to talk about analytically when I'm right, but I'm also going to tell you when I'm wrong. And you know what? You know what happens, okay? There are times where there's a specific player that, you know, proves me right in the wrong ways. And you know, that was Miles Turner for a very long time. You know, the type of player that he wanted to be and the talk he was out there in the media of trying to be a better rebounder, better scorer, be all these different things. And, you know, he brought a little bit of it on himself. And I was always in the camp of saying, if I were to choose between Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner, I would take Domantas Sabonis every time. Now, I don't think that they necessarily chose Turner over Sabonis. I think they looked at it when they traded Sabonis for Tyrese Halliburton, the package that had Buddy Hield, etc., and they thought that they could get more value out of Domantas Sabonis. But I'm going to tell you something here. This new regime and this new approach has benefited nobody more in this organization than Miles Turner. He has completely transformed as a player. And, you know, it's sometimes not fair, those of us talking in the sports media, judging a player's career after 4 or 5 seasons for a player like Miles Turner that I believe came onto the Indiana Pacers roster when he was 20 years old. I think Miles Turner is still under 30 at this point. And, you know, I'm not going to back down from some of the things that we talked about him early on, because I think they were accurate. But he has now blossomed into a totally different player. And actually, in yesterday's game against Atlanta, he's the reason they blew out Atlanta. He's the reason that Indiana got off to that great start. And, you know, he is starting to become a centerpiece player for this basketball team. It's, you know, Tyrese Halliburton's going to be the guy, the star, the attention guy. But quietly, Miles Turner is turning into a great secondary player for this basketball team. You know, there were times on previous teams where I don't even know if you could say that Miles Turner was the third option. And there were times where you said, if Miles Turner is your third option, you got problems. And when you were turning over this organization to have a different outlook, a different approach, Miles Turner was seen as a part of the old regime and that you might want to trade him and you might want to get the best value you possibly can for him at this given time. And I could not be more wrong about him. He has completely transformed. And you know what? He's done a lot less talking. He's let his play do the talking, and I love it. I love to see it, and I am proud to say that I was wrong. And you know what? There are times where I wonder why I always admit when I'm wrong. Because, you know what? Sometimes you've got to admit that, and I'm totally okay with admitting that. Because he's played well, and you know what? He is a matchup problem for Milwaukee and for other teams that are trying to play inside and out because he can hit the three, but he is attacking the rim like a madman right now. I love it. I love seeing him succeed and could not be more proud to say that I'm wrong. So there you go. All right, thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. That's going to shock a lot of people that have listened to this show from the very beginning because we had a lot of talks about Miles Turner over the years. I'll tell you that much. We sure have. No question. All right. So when we come back, we're going to do a Ball State sports rundown. Big weekend for men's volleyball. Look at the baseball team, man. I tell you what, season ended today. They're playing in the Mid-American Conference Tournament Championships. I mean, we talked about it over the last 3 weeks that, hey, you're making a steady climb up there, and what a series it was for them against Akron this weekend. We'll talk a little bit about that and much, much more Ball State softball, etc., and more transfer portal, yes. More transfer portal. We'll get to all of that when we come back. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Yes, as always, presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road right here in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com. You can join the conversation at MarkWMUN on Twitter, as we'll talk a little bit more Pacers and Caitlin Clark, etc. later on. Scottie Scheffler in golf. I'm going to get into that very briefly at the end of today's program because I guess something else that drove me nuts about yesterday's Scottie Scheffler win, and it's nothing that he created. It's everything else that everybody else creates instead. So we'll get to that here in a little bit. I had a great weekend. It was hard not to enjoy the weekend because of how nice it was. Now, I've got a question, okay? And I'm not calling anybody out of my own neighborhood, okay? I mentioned this to somebody this morning that yesterday morning, I'm normally an early riser. I'm usually up by 5:30 nearly every day, except for the weekends. I don't do it on the weekends, okay? I've got to get a little bit of rest anyway. So, you know, Saturday I was up at, I don't know, maybe 8:30-ish, something like that, maybe just before that. So Sunday morning, yesterday morning, I was up a little bit later on Saturday night. I was planning on sleeping in a little bit, and something woke me up. I'm not sure what. And it was like 7:30 in the morning. And I'm about to go back to bed. I knew that I needed to mow my lawn. Okay? Knew it. And I put my head down to just rest just a little bit more. And I listen outside, and I hear the sound of a lawnmower. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, and I'm not upset. I'm not upset at all because I know that's where I'm headed, you know, whenever I get up or whatever the case may be. Anyway, and so instead of going back to bed, I said, you know what? Hey, if they're doing it, I'm going to do it as well. And I was hearing kids playing outside and all that stuff. So I'm like, you know what? Hey, maybe it's safe to go ahead and mow. Now, I mentioned that to a friend of mine this morning, and they were kind of appalled. I'm like, I guess the protocol of being out there at 7:30 in the morning on a Sunday is not appropriate neighborhood etiquette. I'm like, okay, all right. So I was just following along. I was following the leader, I guess. And I didn't even really see who was mowing. I just could hear it. And so I went out there 7:45, mowed the lawn, got it done. And before long, I jumped on the bike, did a nice workout. I was done at 10:15. I was ready to just have a blast of a day. So my question is this. Is there a proper protocol as to what time you can mow your lawn in the morning of a weekend. Like, if somebody went out there at 7 a.m., would that just upset the rest of the neighborhood? Is not that not proper neighborhood protocol? I never really thought about that because my rule of thumb is this. If somebody else is mowing their lawn and it's early, then I can go ahead and do the same thing. Now, I don't know if I've been the only one in my neighborhood. Usually, after work, I may mow the lawn, but I like, for the most part, to do it on the weekends, and I normally do it, I don't know, like late morning, not usually early morning, but in this case, yesterday, I was already up, and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and get it done. But apparently, there's a protocol out there at Mark WMUN. I'd be curious to hear if what I heard this morning is accurate. Anyway, Ball State sports rundown. A lot of things happening. I mean, a lot going on. Look at Ball State baseball. Look at this. Okay, Ball State baseball is now 10-8 in conference play, and where they would sit right now if the season ended today, they'd be in the fourth seed in the Mid-American Conference tournament, which is pretty wild to think about. You know, between themselves and Kent State, obviously there's a back and forth there. But here's what's kind of strange when you look at the conference standings is that Ball State's played 18 games in conference play. Kent State's only played 14. Eastern Michigan behind them has only played 15. You go down the list, and Northern Illinois has played 15. So not everybody's played the same amount of conference games. Now, Bowling Green is running away with the conference. They're a perfect 15-0 at this point, 19-11 overall, but they're dominating Mid-American Conference play right now. But anyway, the whole point is this. You know, there was so much talk about Ball State baseball. What's going on? Hey, you know, they're far down the rankings. You're just not used to seeing that. And, yeah, they have had to play a little bit from behind in conference play. But we kept mentioning, hey, the month of April is going to be extremely key to putting yourself in position to be right where you want to be towards the end of your conference season and hopefully to get one of those spots in the Mid-American Conference tournament. And lo and behold, it took like three weekends, and Ball State's right there. I mean, they're a game out or right at it. Right now, they have a better win percentage than does Kent State, so that would be the tiebreaker. Everybody's going to play the same amount of conference games, so at some point, we'll have a real barometer to go by. But right now, Ball State 10-8. In conference play and had a very nice weekend. Very nice weekend where, you know, they took care of what they needed to take care of against an Akron program that certainly, as we talked to Ball State baseball coach Rich Maloney last week, you know, they're getting their feet underneath them. But as a team that's trying to rise up those rankings, you got to take full advantage of that. And Ball State absolutely did just that, winning the majority of the series over the weekend. If my darn computer could absolutely pull up what I needed to pull up anyway. But Ball State baseball had a nice weekend against Akron. We felt that they had a really good opportunity to do what they needed to do to be right where they are currently, which is, you know, right around the middle of the conference or in that top four range. That's a great feeling. If you're Ball State baseball, it's great. Great stuff. Same for Ball State softball. You know, it was a couple of weeks ago. They were second to last in conference. Now they're 7-8. They've won five games in a row, and had a very nice weekend as well at home. You look at where they are. They're tied with Akron at 7-8 in conference. Ohio's at 8-6 above them. Central Michigan's at 7-5 above them. I mean, they're right where they want to be as well. It's amazing over the last 2 weeks the transformation that both of these programs have taken in their own Mid-American Conference play. And here's the deal. There was a lot of experience from Ball State softball, a lot of experience from Ball State baseball that you had to figure out those roles. We talked with Ball State baseball coach Rich Maloney. They've been injured. So figuring that out as well, you know, takes some time. It absolutely takes some time. Ball State baseball 5-1 on Saturday, 17-7 on Saturday, and then they got the 14-9 win over Akron yesterday and put up some runs too. That's a good sign for Ball State baseball because That's the area from a lineup standpoint that Coach Maloney told us yesterday or last week about that they needed to kind of shore up a little bit. They needed to find a little bit more consistency scoring, and they certainly did just that. So that's a really good sign for Ball State baseball, and we talked about the softball team as well. Ball State men's volleyball, they're rolling through the MEVA tournament, the MEVA conference tournament that Ball State, by the way, won the regular season. These matchups are held at Worthen Arena. Ball State got a 3-0 sweep of Queens University of Charlotte, who was the number 8 seed in the MEVA tournament. They completed the 3-0 sweep on Saturday. So next up for Ball State is a matchup with number 4 seeded Lindenwood. That is happening on Thursday at 7 o'clock. And again, you win that one, you head to the tournament championship. The two teams on the other side is number 2 seeded Loyola Chicago, number 3 seeded Ohio State. So the top 4 seeds are on to the semifinals, and this is going to get figured out over the next week or so. But you got to love the way Ball State is playing. Ball State played Lindenwood twice this season, won in a 3-1 matchup, and then swept Lindenwood in the most recent matchup at Worthen Arena. They are rolling right now. Ball State men's volleyball is absolutely positively rolling right now, and so you would expect it to be likely that they may, they may have a matchup coming up where you have a tournament championship coming your way here in a little bit. So again, you win the MEVA tournament, you head to the NCAA tournament again, and that happened a couple of years ago where Ball State won the MEVA and headed to the Final Four of the NCAA tournament side of things. So that is looking like a good track for Ball State men's volleyball as well. So we talked baseball. We talked a little softball. This was some news today confirmed by his own social media. But the starting quarterback for Ball State football through the second half of last year, Kyle Kelly, who I believe when he was recruited to Ball State, one of the highest ranked recruits Ball State football had ever secured, he has entered the transfer portal. As of today, with 2 years of eligibility ahead. Now, couple things here that is very, very interesting. You know, coming out of spring practice, spring ball, the spring game last Saturday, we had this conversation with Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News last week just about how it was going to be a little bit of a competition again between Kyle Kelly and Caden Simonza, the freshman last year that played a decent amount of football for them. And so the fact of the matter is, you know, you wonder why the decision now, what occurred in between then, if anything. And, you know, you wonder about a lot of things. But here's the fact of the matter. I think maybe, I do know this. I know for a fact how high the Ball State program is about Caden Simonza, how high they were on him. And also, last year there were certain packages for Kyle Kelly when Ball State was at full strength, when they had Lane Hatcher, Caden Simonza, and Kyle Kelly playing in the same game. Then personnel-wise, it changed. You really adopted a run-first style, clearly, with Kyle Kelly and Marquez Cooper as well. Marquez Cooper is elsewhere. Kyle Kelly now is elsewhere. So I wonder, you know, you think about a couple of years ago. 2 years ago with Carson Steele and John Paddock as the starting quarterback, you remember that towards the end of the year that the passing game really started to regress a little bit, and that, you know, that made the Ball State offense a little bit one-dimensional at that time. Last offseason, there was talk about heading into the year, the addition of Lane Hatcher was partly because you wanted to be more balanced. You wanted to be able to stretch the football down the field and be able to challenge a defense by both running the football and throwing the football. And you brought in the second leading rusher in the MAC at Marquez Cooper. You felt like you had that balanced offense. And then injuries hit your wide receiver core with Robinson and with Hunt and with a lot of different things. And you had to recreate yourself and go back to a more run-first style that once again, are you heading into another offseason where you say, hey, we want to be more balanced? And we saw the balance between run and pass when Kyle Kelly was in there compared to Kaden Samanza and Lane Hatcher from the year before. I just wonder if that's a factor of this all. If Kyle Kelly was going to be used kind of like he was at the beginning of the year, he wanted a different role, whatever the case may be. I think it's going to be really interesting there, but also this should also make you two things. One, feel like the Ball State staff feels about Kaden Samanza. You know, he had a very good spring, a very good summer, and then had the fast track to playing in those early games. Now, don't, I guess, get locked on just Kaden Samanza, because we didn't even know Kaden Samanza's name until right before the opener in August, September, that there was a lot of momentum feeling as though Kaden Samanza, hey, you know, that's gaining some steam. So you brought in some different guys at the quarterback room. Who knows? Who knows what can happen between now and then? But I think all signs would point to Kaden Samanza being the guy at quarterback. And who knows, maybe going into an offseason where you have that kind of feeling that he's going to be the guy, that's got to be a good feeling. So anyway, that was some news from the Ball State football transfer portal. Kyle Kelly, the starter for the second half of last year for Ball State football, has entered his name into the transfer portal. So a lot of Ball State news there. We're going to catch up on this a little bit more coming up tomorrow with Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News. But when we come back, obviously a big day in Indiana. Indiana Fever have the number one overall draft pick tonight, and it's likely, or it's 99.9% sure, it feels like, going to be Caitlin Clark. And here's what people from an analytical standpoint aren't really focusing on, because the scoring ability is number one when people see the eye test. But I'm going to tell you, there's an area of her game that's going to translate immediately and make the Indiana Fever a better basketball team immediately tonight. We'll talk about that when we return. It's the Power on a Monday here on the Talk of Muncie, WMUN. Brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you're getting all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Glad you're with us on the show, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. There's a lot going on for middle of April. You got to think, it's been 4 years since the Indiana Pacers have been in the playoffs. They will play in their first playoff series in 4 years coming up on Sunday against the Milwaukee Bucks in the 3-6 matchup, that is, in the Eastern Conference playoffs. You have Caitlin Clark likely drafted by the Indiana Fever tonight, and we always have Ball State sports going on, and then the NFL draft's going to hit. I mean, we've been mentioning this for the last couple of weeks. We haven't talked near enough NFL draft-related items with the Indianapolis Colts, but I guess, you know, that's maybe a good thing, because I don't know if you want us talking for a month nonstop about who's their first-round draft pick going to be, because, anyway, that gets redundant. But here's what people have missed about Caitlin Clark, and you know what? It's mentioned, but not nearly as much as her scoring ability. But her as a passer is, I mean, absolutely special. And, you know, I look at, it's great when you score 32 points per game and, you're hitting 6 to 7 threes a game or whatever the ridiculous number she was doing. But I think people forget this part, okay? I mean, that team around her had very nice role players, but you think about all the teams that they had to navigate. Iowa had to navigate through the LSU team that had 3 or 4 different scorers on that team. You had UConn with 2 or 3 players, and then of course South Carolina had like 7, 8 deep. But the interesting part about it was obviously that Iowa team, I think, overachieved in a lot of ways, and that had just as much to do with Caitlin Clark, if not more, Caitlin Clark's passing ability in transition and being, you know, kind of attempting passes that others would not think of. And we know in today's day and age in basketball, we know a couple of things, but we know this wholeheartedly. The point guard or the player initiating the offense is more important nowadays than ever. The best thing that's going to happen to Aaliyah Boston and Kelsey Mitchell and others on that basketball team is going to be Caitlin Clark. And it may be better for the team if she scores 15 a game compared to scoring 25 a game, because that means she's going to be a distributor. I think her role as a player being more like a Tyrese Halliburton, that's a playmaker first and a scorer second, is going to have her make an even bigger impact on the WNBA earlier than it is her deep shooting ability. And by the way, the more she gets others involved, the better she's going to have open looks. So I think people are going to look at her scoring ability first, but really as a playmaker, that's where she's going to be electric from day one. And I don't think it's going to be particularly close, to be honest with you. I think her playmaking is going to make an immediate impact. So, should be a fun night to watch all of the festivities around her being drafted, etc. Good for Indiana. Hey, you know, the more sports content, like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the better. I'm down for it all. I'm good for all of that. So, we'll cover it properly over the next couple of days, etc. So, I told the audience that we were going to talk about this today, and, you know, just like always, you know, I run out of time, but I don't want to spend too much time on this week, so we'll do it very briefly. But Scottie Scheffler won his second Masters yesterday, and it was a fun, it's just fun to watch greatness, and he is really good. I mean, he is really good. He's playing at a level better than any golfer in the world right now. That's a fact. But what we need to stop doing is elevating him to Tiger status or Jack status, or trying to say, well, look at the run he's about to go on. It almost goes back to the rant that I had at the beginning of the show about the Pacers and, you know, hey, this is the best is yet to come, etc. Because since Tiger, I go back to David Duval, I go back to Phil, Rory, Jason Day had a cup of tea, Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa. You know, we've had all of these different golfers that were about to go on ridiculous runs, and they've never happened. Actually, when Tiger was out in the early 2010s, Patrick Harrington won back-to-back major championships, and people were trying to put him in the spotlight. Look, why don't you let things happen before we start to create the next Tiger Woods? Because it hasn't happened. And, you know, I hate to be critical of Rory McIlroy because he's done so much for the PGA Tour. But at the end of the day, I wonder if Rory McIlroy's, I guess, role in the LIV Golf PGA Tour stuff is going to be more impactful at the end of his career than his actual career, because he hadn't been a factor in majors for a very long time. He isn't even close in the conversation with Tiger Woods. It ain't even close. Like, we try so hard to elevate the next great golfer to being the next great. I mean, we did it last year with Jon Rahm. You know, Jon Rahm barely made the cut this year at the Masters. You know, I guess that's more of a credit for the consistency of Scottie Scheffler, and he's been the most consistent golfer over the last 2 years. And why don't we just let it happen? Because it's not him. He's not creating this. Scottie Scheffler's doing nothing to create this, okay? It's everybody else trying to just push the narrative forward before it even has gotten off the ground. You know, if he wins another major this year, we can start to have the conversation. But, I mean, it ain't even close to what he's done and what Tiger did. I mean, Tiger was winning, you know, by 15 shots. They were Tiger-proofing courses. Like, let's not do that, okay? What Scottie Scheffler's doing right now is great, but there were openings yesterday for others to win. Scottie Scheffler was the most consistent player, and he deserves every bit of it, and it was fun to watch. It really, really was fun to watch, but we just can't sit and enjoy, can we? We gotta wait for the next big thing, right? it's crazy. There might be somebody that challenges and does something like Tiger, but I'm waiting for it. And maybe it is Scottie Scheffler. Maybe it is one of these golfers. But the fields are so darn balanced. And that's a credit to the PGA. But it also makes it even more rare for somebody to do what Tiger used to do. And so it's something that needs to be said, because I knew it was going to happen. After he wins his second Masters, oh my gosh, he's entered Tiger territory. No, not even close. Not even close. So anyway, enjoy your night. I guess we got on some rants today. I don't know. Well, gotta be honest. So that's what we do. Lots to talk about this week. Hope you all had a great weekend. We're going to recap everything from Caitlin Clark from tonight to previewing the Pacers. We'll do it all this week. Back with you tomorrow at 4. Have a good evening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4.